Chick-fil-A, the American chicken sandwich giant, is being forced to close its first and only store in the United Kingdom just days after the store was opened. There was a local backlash over the well-known and staunchly conservative religious views of Chick-fil-A's owners. The store opened in a shopping mall in Reading, England on October 10th and was quickly hit by protests by LGBT rights activists, as well as calls for a boycott.
Shares of Johnson & Johnson dropped on Friday after the company said it's recalling around 33,000 bottles of baby powder after U.S. health regulators found traces of asbestos. The company, which is facing more than 15,000 lawsuits over its products containing talc, said the voluntary recall applies to one lot of baby powder produced and shipped in the U.S. in 2018. J&J said it has launched an investigation into the matter.
U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper in Kabul on Monday told reporters he's considering keeping some U.S. troops in northeast Syria to protect oil fields from falling into the hands of Islamic State. President Donald Trump faces fierce criticism at home and abroad for announcing plans to pull American soldiers from Syria. Critics say that move amounted to a green light for a Turkish military operation targeting America's Syrian Kurdish allies.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's October the 22nd, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. And we've got another business day getting underway here. We'll check in on markets from around the world here momentarily, focus in on some news about more of these drones taking off for deliveries. A couple of big companies have joined in on this. You might be surprised at a couple of them. A little bit later in the program, we're going to be focusing in on your credit card. Average credit card interest rates are climbing, while interest rates generally for everything else are falling. Why is that? Ted Rossman will be here from creditcards.com to give us a little bit of a behind-the-scenes look at what might be going on there and how you possibly could make some changes to save some money. First up this morning, we're going to be talking with John List at the University of Chicago, studying people in the real world and focusing in on economics with what people in the real world are telling him about all kinds of things. We're going to talk to John first off this morning. We'll bring him in momentarily. So we've got a really good show for you today. Please stay with us. Well, first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk as we look at a flat futures market heading to the opening bell later this morning. Dow futures are up just 6 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures up single digits this morning as well. As we look around the rest of the globe, markets are generally higher in Europe, in London, Germany, and France, up by nearly a third to a half a percent. In Asia, markets are going to end the day in the green as well, with the Nikkei up nearly 57 points, about a quarter of a percent. In Hong Kong, up by nearly 60 points. In China, up by nearly 15 points for about a half a percent. And oil is trading this morning at $53.52 a barrel in the United States. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. A couple of bigger companies are getting involved in the drone business. Imagine CVS prescriptions being filled and delivered to your door by a drone. It is about to become a reality thanks to a deal between UPS and the pharmacy chain. No word exactly on when this will begin, but the deal includes creating a variety of deliveries beyond medication. UPS recently became the first company to win FAA approval. The company has already been using drones to carry medical products between healthcare facilities in North Carolina. Amazon is joining the fight against fake videos online known as deepfakes. The company is teaming with Facebook in the deepfake detection challenge. Amazon will offer $1 million to help teams spot deepfakes. Facebook is also giving researchers 5,000 sample videos to use. Experts say the use of artificial intelligence to create deepfakes will only get worse as technology advances. And another state is dropping out of the fight over more than a $26 billion merger of Sprint and T-Mobile. Colorado announced it would no longer be involved in the lawsuit after coming to agreement with T-Mobile and Dish Network, which is purchasing assets divested as part of the merger. The deal will see Dish add 2,000 jobs in Colorado, while T-Mobile agreed to build out a 5G network across the state. Colorado joins Mississippi in withdrawing from the lawsuit. You expect to see other states follow suit with similar deals. Let's begin front and center this morning on what actual people tell economists about what is going on with their money. We are happy to have with us this morning John List, who has sort of revolutionized study of economics by just doing that, going out in the field and finding people and watching people. John is the Kenneth C. Griffin Distinguished Service Professor in Economics at the University of Chicago. John, good morning. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm very, very interested in this story because what you've done is really just taken your field work and followed all of what we do, whether it's in an Uber or giving a tip to somebody, and creating an education course out of it.
That's right. The way I think about my research, Steve, is that I use the world as my lab, and I learn about how people behave and how economics can help us understand how they behave.
And that's called social preference, right? Let's get into some of these terms that we might be dealing with in this interview this morning. Social preference. Tell us about that.
Right, sure. So when I think of social preference, I think of any time we care about the welfare of others, whether we want to give charity dollars, whether we want to give tips. These are what economists call social preferences, things like altruism and just caring for the well-being of others.
Well, tell us what you have found in going out and doing some of this field work. You mentioned Uber. I know Uber is one of them. You've probably been looking at how we've been flying on the airlines as well. What have you been finding?
That's right. That's right. So lately, what I've been looking at is how people decide to make tips on Uber. So I used to be the chief economist at Uber, and now I happen to be the chief economist now at Lyft. But when I was at Uber, I was in charge of rolling out the tipping platform in June of 2017. And the particular paper that I've just written looks at data from over 40 million observations of people who have taken trips on Uber around Chicago.
So when you formulate a policy or formulate a course on this, what is it specifically that you're showing?
Now, the idea in this particular job was to show exactly what are the features of the trip that determine how much people tip. So things like if the driver did a good job on the trip, were people more likely to tip? And beyond that, it's sort of establishing facts around who tips, how much do people tip, who receives the tips, and kind of the wins, wheres, and whys of tipping.
Yeah, and it's interesting with Uber, the experiment, because generally I think tips are made privately. So this is a decision that's between you and God and your wallet, right?
No, that's exactly right. So usually when we tip, if you think about the typical restaurant experience, you know, we're served, we eat our food, we eat the dessert, we have a coffee, and then at the end, we put the tip on the table. Usually we add it on to the bill, the credit card bill. But in this particular case on Uber, what happens is you get out of the car, and then several minutes or hours or days later, in private, you decide how much to tip.
And so what's gone from that is that being in a restaurant, having the server look at you, have maybe even your guest at your table look at you and determine whether or not they're going to judge you on what you've left.
That's exactly right. A lot of times when you think about it, there's a lot of social pressure involved with tipping in restaurants and at the barbershop, etc. But with Uber, it's sort of a really interesting test of social preferences because you're more or less making this decision on your own, and no one even realizes how much you tip, including the driver. A lot of people don't know this, but the driver cannot even pinpoint which of their riders actually gave him or her a tip.
And I'm seeing numbers that say 60% of people never tip when they're in an Uber. What is it about their experience that has caused them not to do that?
No, that's a good question. So one stark feature of our data is what jumps out is that, exactly as you said, 3 out of every 5 people never tip once. And only 1% of people tip on every trip. So it's sort of interesting when you compare those types of tipping facts with in a restaurant where nearly everyone tips. It sort of tells you about the importance of social pressure in the restaurant setting.
And so how can we use what you're finding here in the bigger world of economics? How do you share this with your students and put in research the way that this might impact policy going forward?
Yeah, I think when you give some consideration of what tipping actually represents, tipping is simply a transfer from one person to another. And what you have in our data are things like, you know, on the average trip, it's only tipped about 50 cents. So this ends up being 4% of the fare. So in essence, when people do something like tipping in private, it really ends up being a small amount of dollars. So if we want to have our economy have a lot of tipping, really the policy prescription is make sure that people are doing this in public rather than in private. Because in public, what you're going to find is there's a lot more tipping, in large part because people are simply following a social norm, and in that they're trying to do the best thing so they don't look bad themselves. They're trying to preserve their own social image. And these are features of social preferences that economists end up finding very important, and that people like to express them when their actions are in public rather than in private.
One of the latest field experiments that John's been involved in, how social pressure, how the external social benefits of that pressure impact how we tip, and he's been looking at Uber. John, I'm curious, with this new era of technology where it seems that everything we do is on an app and maybe there's a human behind it that deserves a tip, how this is affecting work in 2019 and all of those people, the data that you found, all of those people that expect a tip, are they apparently not getting them, or does this hurt their bottom line?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think what we find is that in this new world, let's call it the gig economy, one feature of it is that workers now have a new amount of flexibility where they can choose when and where they work. But part of that on Uber, of course, is 5% of their earnings is determined by the amount of tips that they receive. So sort of an interesting question around that is, does this separation between, let's say, supply and demand or customer and server, does this cause the quality of service to actually go down? And what we have a unique feature about our data is we actually collect telematics information from drivers' phones during their trip. So we can look at things like hard accelerations, hard brakes, the potential speeding of the drivers. And what we find is that those types of features of the trips actually critically determine how much people are tipped, how much our drivers are tipped. Now, this is important because what this shows is that the quality of the service has to be maintained even in this environment where there is a separation between customer and employee.
Yeah, and maybe, too, some of these apps, and I don't know if Uber is considering this at all, whether they're going to change what they do, but make it so that there is more of that peer pressure when it comes to tipping.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, what both companies are thinking about doing, as far as I know, is they're moving the tipping action back to when people are actually taking the trip. So if you're actually in the car and have to make the decision whether to tip or not, we have some evidence that suggests that people are more likely to tip, and when they do tip, they actually tip more off, more dollars as well.
Very intriguing stuff, John. We appreciate you being on with us this morning and sharing some of it with us. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Steve, and I look forward to talking to you soon. Have a great day.
Absolutely. John List, the Kenneth C. Griffin Distinguished Service Professor in Economics at the University of Chicago.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. In the second half of The Opening Bell this morning, we're going to be focusing in on your money. The credit card that's in your wallet, the interest rate on it has probably been going up. And let's bring in Ted Rossman this morning, who's an analyst at creditcards.com and bankrate.com, for more on this. Ted, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
Help me figure this out, because we've seen the Federal Reserve twice now lower short-term interest rates. Why is credit card interest rate activity going up?
Some of that is because there's a lag, and sometimes it takes at least one statement cycle or even two for that rate cut to filter through. Some of it also is that while credit card rates do mirror the prime rate, especially for existing balances, we are seeing, in particular for new purchases, issuers building in a little bit of extra margin there. And the end result is that on store credit cards, people are paying an average of 26%, which is up a little bit from last year. On general purpose cards, the average is 21%.
And those are the average numbers. I'm sure you have some horror stories about the high ends of those, don't you?
The high end for retail cards is about 30%. Wow. In fact, BrandSource, which is a coalition of mostly mom-and-pop kind of electronics and appliance and furniture stores, their credit cards charge an average of 30.24%. Other stores like Big Lots, Piercing Pagoda, Zales, Discount Tire, and a few others are at 29.99%. If you're thinking of getting any of these cards, you absolutely have to pay your bills in full every month and avoid interest to make it worth it.
Yeah, Ted, there are a lot of folks that aren't doing that, though, aren't there? I mean, the data shows that we're carrying a lot of credit card debt.
That is a worry for me, especially now, because unemployment is at a 50-year low. We think about the stock market near record highs. This is a 10-year economic expansion, and yet there are a lot of people struggling with debt. The American Bankers Association says that about 6 in 10 credit card holders are carrying debt from month to month, and it's very expensive debt, often 3 to 4x the interest rate that you're going to pay on your car loan, your student loan, or your mortgage.
What are some strategies here? I know in the past there was suggestions that, well, if you don't like the interest rate that's on your card, go find a lower interest rate. Is that still a possibility for people to shift those balances to lower interest rate cards?
It is. My favorite option is to get a 0% balance transfer card. Those still last as long as 21 months. That's the Citi Simplicity card. There is a 5% transfer fee up front. So some good alternatives that give 15 months with no interest and no transfer fee are the Chase Slate, the Bank AmeriCard, and the Amex Everyday. I think with these Fed rate cuts, especially if there's another one or two and the bank's margins are under even more pressure, I do fear that these offers might get trimmed back, or maybe the transfer fees will go up. So there's some urgency to pounce on them now if you're in debt.
Part of what's going on here, and I was surprised to see this, but we all have these credit cards that have some sort of perk involved with them, whether it's points from grocery shopping or maybe you get points from flying or whatever, but all of these different perks. The companies that are offering these things are losing out on some of this, aren't they?
Rewards are great if you pay your bills in full, and that's really what this comes down to, is that it doesn't make sense to pay 17, 20, 25% interest just to get 1 or 2 or 3% cash back or travel points. You can make credit cards work for you if you're paying your bills in full, you're matching the right cards with your spending, and that brings us back to these retail cards. We're all going to be offered these at the point of sale this holiday season. You can make them work for you if you pay those bills in full. Maybe you could get a 10% discount off a sizable purchase, or if you shop a lot at Amazon or Target or Best Buy, they all give 5% back on their credit cards. There are some cases where they work, but paying your bills in full is the first step.
Do you have any data on what the average person has in terms of a balance on their credit cards? What do those numbers look like?
My favorite numbers come from the Fed. They say that the average household with credit card debt owes about $5,700, and the median is $2,300. And again, we're talking about 6 in 10 cardholders here. So this is a common issue. It really cuts across income brackets. A lot of people have a lot of credit card debt, and it continues to rise, and some of that speaks to the strength of the economy. But my advice to people is make sure you can pay it back in all climates, not just the best case scenario. And right now we're in, generally speaking, about as good as it gets in terms of low unemployment, high stock prices, sustained growth. So get on top of your debt now, get that balance transfer card. Think about taking on a side hustle. That's a way you could put the robust job market to work. And then any money you're able to take in from that can help funnel towards your credit cards and knock out that high-cost debt.
Yeah, and I'm still confused. If we're in such a good economy, I know wages have been going up some, why are people taking on all of this credit card debt?
People tell us it's usually one of two reasons. Number one is an emergency, something with their house, their car, their health. A lot of people are ill-prepared for emergencies, unfortunately. The Fed says that 40% of Americans don't even have $400 in the case of an emergency. So if some of those issues strike that I talked about and you don't have savings, then it goes right on a credit card. The second most common reason is day-to-day expenses. And we know that a lot of costs are creeping up, everything from housing to food to transportation. I think there is a little bit of a shadow economy here that a lot of people are close to the edge, and some of it is lifestyle creep and some of it is really out of their control. Credit cards become the crutch, and that's not really sustainable because that's really expensive debt.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned earlier the economy perhaps going south. If that happens, it's going to become just that much harder to pay your bills.
It will, and it won't take a 2007, 8, 9 style recession to cause a lot of people to fall behind on their credit card bills, unfortunately, because rates are much higher this time around. It's an unintended consequence of the CARD Act. In tying all these rates in with the prime rate and building in some extra margin, what we find now is that even the low end of the range, people with good credit, that's about 17% on average. It was more like 12% in 2007. Rates are much higher, and it's easy to get into credit card debt, and unfortunately, it's hard to get out of it.
You mentioned something earlier about the retail atmosphere, all of us getting ready to go shopping. We're about a month away now from Black Friday and the start of the holiday shopping season. When we go into the stores where some of these credit cards are offering, some of the clerks are putting on a pretty high-pressure sell on us, aren't they?
That's right. We found that 18 million people have been pressured into signing up for one of these retail cards by a store clerk. They carry high interest rates. Oftentimes, the rewards are not as good as you get on general-purpose cards. I think there's a few cases in which they make sense. One is if you can get a really good discount on a sizable purchase. Don't waste that 10% off if it's a $50 purchase. But if it's something big, like an appliance or a lot of holiday shopping, then I think you can go for it. If you're loyal to the store and you can get 5% back every time you go to Ann Taylor or Best Buy or Target, that makes sense. And also if you're building or rebuilding credit, because these store cards typically are easier to get. So in these three scenarios, if you can pay your bills in full, I'd say go for it. Otherwise, steer clear because of the high rates and the generally subpar rewards.
Is there anything that the industry is at fault at for in this area? Because I know there was a time when we had stories about maybe some unethical trying to get us to sign up for things, the high pressure aside, the ease at which it is to get a credit card. Are those things involved here?
There can be some pressure from the store clerks because many of them are incentivized personally, and of course their store benefits a lot. So you do have to watch out for that. It's totally fine to say no or I'm going to think about it. Another thing, it's not illegal, but it is a gotcha when it comes into play with store cards, is deferred interest. And when you see these no interest for 12-month promotions on store credit cards, many of them charge deferred interest. So if anything is left on that balance at the end of the term, they can go back and charge retroactive interest on your average daily balance all the way back to the beginning. That's common among store cards and their deferred interest offers. We don't see it much on general purpose cards. That's definitely something to be aware of when you're looking at one of these store cards. If you take one, make doubly sure that you pay the bill in full. That back interest is a nasty surprise.
Ted, always good information. Great talking with you this morning. Thanks for being on with us.
My pleasure. Have a good one.
You too. Ted Rossman, an analyst at creditcards.com and at bankrate.com. Make sure you follow Ted, too, on Twitter. Lots of good information on his Twitter account at Ted Rossman.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market, yes, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street a little bit later this morning with the futures up just a couple of points on the Dow and a couple of points on the NASDAQ as well, flat for the S&P. After a generally positive day in Europe and in Asia, markets were closed today in Japan for coronation there. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, we made some progress in corn and soybean harvest last week, but we're still running well below average. 30% of the nation's corn crop harvested as of Sunday night, compared to an average of 47%. Illinois with 36% harvested compared to an average of 70%. Indiana 36% compared to an average of 53%. And in Wisconsin, 7% of the corn crop in the bin compared to an average of 24%. Soybean harvest 46% nationally complete Sunday night. That's below an average of 64%. Illinois, 52% harvested, average of 68%. Indiana, 53% harvested, below the average of 62%. Iowa with 48%, below the average of 61%. And Wisconsin, 32% of the soybean in the bin as of Sunday. That's below the five-year average of 55%. Taking a look at grain trade at the Board of Trade yesterday, after 3 days of pretty strong gains, profit-taking hit the wheat market, and the December wheat contract dropped 8 cents a bushel, while December corn was down 4 cents. November soybeans, however, down just half a cent a bushel. And in livestock futures at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday, we found lean hog contracts mostly higher, with the back months in the lean hog contract moving higher on the hopes of pork exports, particularly to China. That's Agribiz for this morning. I'm Orion Samuelson. Have a great day.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of more stories from the ticker before we leave you this morning. European Council President Donald Tusk says European Union leaders will decide in the coming days whether to grant Britain another extension to the deadline for leaving the European Union. But he says their decision depends on developments in London. Britain faces another week of political gridlock after British lawmakers on Monday denied Prime Minister Boris Johnson a chance to hold a vote on Brexit divorce bill agreed to in Brussels last week. The New York Attorney General has accused ExxonMobil of lying to investors about how profitable the company will remain as governments impose stricter regulations to combat global warming. The lawsuit says, which was to go to trial today, claims the Texas energy giant kept two sets of books to make the company appear more valuable to investors. Exxon denies the allegations, calling them politically motivated. It says the company looks forward to being exonerated in court. Facebook is announcing new measures to help prevent election interference in 2020. The social media giant says it has launched Facebook Protect to safeguard the accounts of elected officials, candidates, and others who might be targeted by hackers and foreign adversaries. Another step the company will take is banning paid ads that advertise users not to vote. They will also make pages more transparent by adding more details about who is behind a specific page. That's not enough for a group of Democrat and Republican senators. A bipartisan group of senators gathered yesterday to introduce a bill that will require the largest social media platforms to give users a way to easily move their data to another service. The bill, known as the Access Act, would apply to platforms with products or services with over 100 million monthly active users in the United States. In addition to Facebook's core platform, the legislation would also hit two of its key products, Facebook Messenger and Instagram. Google's YouTube would also hit the threshold as well. on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Tuesday, October the 22nd. Existing home sales figures for September are out today. Industry analysts forecasting a retreat. The experts see last month's home sales coming in at an annual rate of 5.4 million. That's a tenth of a percent below the rate for August. We'll also get the Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index. And on the earnings calendar today, quite a few big earnings, including Fifth Third Bank, McDonald's Corporation, Harley-Davidson, Discover Financial Services, and Equity Residential. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, October the 22nd.